Welcome to Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And welcome back to another scintillating edition of Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. I am Fisher, your radio root sleuth, on the program where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. Well, another great guest coming up today that I'm very excited about, in fact, in two parts, because this is a person who's been making a lot of noise with her journey of late. Her name is Leanne Walker Young. She lives in Charlotte, North Carolina, and she is the daughter of the late coach of the Chicago Cubs, Verlin Rube Walker. And he passed away in 1971 when Leanne was only 3 years old. And 3 years ago, she got the itch. She had to know more about her dad. She had to find his voice. And so it has taken her on a three-year journey that has gotten her into the broadcast booth with the Cubs, talked to some of the old players from the 1960s, and has given her the opportunity to be on ESPN with Keith Olbermann talking about her search. And she's had some great successes, and you're going to want to hear this story. It's coming up in just a little bit. But right now, let's head out to Boston and our good friend, the chief genealogist with the New England Historic Genealogical Society and AmericanAncestors.org, David Allen Lambert. Hello, David.
Hello, Fish. Greetings from Beantown.
Boy, there's a lot of news going on today in our family histoire news, starting out with this thing about the bridal gown. Did you hear about this?
I did. This girl named Abigail Kingston. Talk about a family never threw anything away.
Right.
And I'll tell you, the ironic thing about wearing a bridal gown that's been passed down for that long, that they're the same size and didn't need to be altered that much, is pretty amazing.
120 years old. This thing was first worn by Mary Lowry Warren on December 11th, 1895, and 10 brides on Abigail's mother's side have worn it. Now she wants it.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's amazing to think that over 200 hours were spent restoring it, but I'm sure it's probably going to be wonderful. The big day's coming up this month on the 17th of October, so the 11th person to wear it?
Yeah, exactly. And it makes you wonder how many more centuries this can go on.
I would think that it's probably endless. I think that since they've started this tradition, why not try it for another 100 years? Apparently, it's so fragile, though. She's not wearing it for the ceremony, but afterwards at the cocktail reception.
Interesting. Well, we wish her the best of luck. Then there's a story about the Mona Lisa.
Okay, well, Mona Lisa, as we know, is an iconic figure in world history. She sat for Leonardo da Vinci, and it's probably one of the most well-recognized paintings in the world. But who was she? Well, Lisa Gherardini is thought to be the lady who sat for the painting by da Vinci. We know that in the 16th century, she later went to live at the convent of St. Ursula, which is in Florence. And back in July, they did some archaeology work there. They found a batch of skeletons and some bone fragments, and it leans to the possibility that they found her.
Wow.
The great thing about technology now, Fish, the world we live in, is allowing us to look at ancient remains. And, you know, obviously we found the king in the car park with the king of England, you know, found under a parking lot.
Yes.
And so the same technology is trying to be applied. They're having some trouble with the remaining bone fragments to determine a connection. However, they're not giving up. They're hoping that as technology progresses in the field of DNA analysis, that they'll be able to conclusively say one way or the other that they've found the real Mona Lisa.
Isn't that something?
Excellent stuff.
That's going to be one of those ongoing stories, just like King Richard III.
Exactly. Listen, the next time you pick up a glass and you leave your fingerprints on it, I want you to know that it is now a family history artifact.
Really?
Yeah. Did you hear about the article in Newsweek?
Oh, the Newsweek thing. Yes, this is incredible. If you haven't read it, we've got it posted on our site, extremegenes.com.
It is amazing. Basically, what they did is they took a sampling of over 243 individuals, 61 African-American males and females, and 61 Europeans, and they did a comparison. Now, there's no significant difference between a male and a female in the fingerprints that they looked at, but between the Europeans and the Africans, there were significant differences. The time in which fingerprints are formed is in the sixth or seventh week of gestation,
right,
in the womb. So this this is almost another way of looking genetically at our past. Anthropologists are already looking at the uses of this for looking at global patterns of where people come from for identity. I mean, we already used fingerprints for crime solving. Now maybe it's for genealogy.
Wow.
More and more people need to be involved in this, however. So they're going to need a larger scope of the population to do that. So less painful than getting a DNA sample, just put your fingerprint down.
Wouldn't
so
that be something?
Maybe there'll be a place that you can send in your fingerprints, other than the FBI, and get it analyzed.
Yeah, something else for us to worry about getting out into the wrong hands, right?
Exactly.
Oh, and by the way, did you see this, David? At the end of that article, it talks about the fact that they may be able to use fingerprints to determine your risks for certain diseases as well. In fact, they've determined that Alzheimer's patients have a different fingerprint than those who are at low risk for Alzheimer's.
I saw that, and there are also ones that indicate for breast cancer, which is rather an interesting thing to think that something as simple as the analysis of your fingerprint might unlock potential clues to your future health.
Wow. Unbelievable stuff. All right. What else you got?
What else I have for you is our tech tip is going to be part one of two.
All right.
I attended the Guild of One Name Studies, who were in Boston at NEHGS last week, and they talked to me about a piece of software called TNG, which stands for the Next Generation of Genealogy Site Building. It's a commercial piece of software that allows you to go in and build your own family tree website. You can take that, you can post the information right on a web page, and all the data is there. It has a lot of capabilities. So I'm going to get a copy of that, look at it this weekend, and report back next week when we tune in.
I like that. Sounds like a great thing. Imagine being able to host your own site. Great stuff. Thanks so much, David. And coming up next, we're going to talk to Leanne Walker Young. She is the daughter of the late Chicago Cubs coach Rube Walker, and she's been on a search to hear his voice, among other things. Wait till you hear her story. Coming up next on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. And welcome back to Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show and ExtremeGenes.com. It is Fisher here, your radio root sleuth. And many years ago, back in my youth, as a Mets fan in the New York area, I had the occasion to actually hang out with the New York Mets when they won the 1969 World Series on the set of the Ed Sullivan Show, where my dad worked, and I got to get the autographs of all the guys connected with the team. One of those guys was named Rube Walker, and he was the Mets coach, and he had a brother on the Chicago Cubs at the time, who the Mets had actually beaten out to win the division, and his name was also Rube Walker, Verlin Rube Walker. And I remember, sadly, back in 1971, when the Mets Rube Walker had to go back to Chicago for the funeral of his brother. And at the time, Verlin had a little 3-year-old girl named Leanne. And Leanne is on the phone with me right now. Hi, Leanne. Welcome to Extreme Genes. Nice to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have such a great story about family history, and I think you have that hole that so many people experience when they lose somebody young. You are only 3 years old, so you have virtually no memories of your dad, I would assume.
No memories of him. And when people talk about it as a loss, and for me, I like to talk about it as a void, really a lack, because I didn't know him, so I didn't miss him.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. But you were missing things, the role that he would have played in your life had he lived. And certainly you've heard all about him throughout your life, not only because of his role in your family, but the fact that he was a beloved figure in Chicago.
Yes, and it's interesting because I did grow up hearing stories from family members about my dad, but I really kind of just didn't talk about it. It was almost as if I wanted to pretend like it was okay and that there was this void in my life and I pretended like it wasn't there. And for me, I think there's real power in figuring out where you came from, and which is, I'm sure, what your listeners do a lot,
yes,
a lot of. And so I took on this soul mission. I started calling it a quest, and now I've kind of turned it into a soul mission because I had a hole in my soul the size of my dad, and I really wanted to get to know him. So that's how it started. I just decided I was going to really delve into his life and get to know him more than just the surface of the pictures that I had seen and the stories that I had been told by my family members. I really wanted to go out into the world and learn about him, and I was just blessed that he did have this public life with the Chicago Cubs.
Absolutely. It's a lot more than a lot of people have, because obviously he generated news stories and lots of photographs, had associations with many interesting people and baseball Hall of Famers, which had to be very interesting to you as you came to understand the significance of that. And I was reading about your quest, and you really took this public. I mean, it wound up on ESPN that you were trying to find out more about your dad, and in particular to find some audio of him, because you have no recollection of his voice.
Yes, I had really laid out all the pictures and all the stories and made a timeline, and it kind of hit me that I'd never heard his voice. I just had never heard the sound of my father's voice, and that became kind of an archetypal quest, that fatherly wisdom. You know, I'm sure if you close your eyes now, you can hear your father saying something to you in his voice, and just whether he's giving you wisdom or advice or calling you to task or whatever. And I didn't have that. So that was my search. I began, and I thought, I'll call the Cubs, and they'll send me a videotape, an audio tape of him doing some radio show, and it'll be over. And that didn't happen. I called WGN. WGN had nothing. And so I kind of had to start on this whole journey of looking for a needle in a haystack through collectors and broadcasters. And nothing turned up for almost 2 years.
Now, when did you start this?
I started it in 2012. And that's when I reached out to the Chicago Cubs organization. And about 6 months later, Pat Hughes, who was a WGN, the Cubs play-by-play announcer, got in touch with me and said that he would help me. And he put me in touch with some collectors in the area, thinking that they may know someone who may have a dusty old box of audio, and that's how I would find my tape. So I just began calling people, which is completely out of my realm. I just don't do that. I just don't call people.
Not in your comfort zone.
For help. It's totally out of my comfort zone. And so this was a stretch for me, and really something, I guess, just really part of the journey. It was part of my journey of healing. And so it took me out of my comfort zone to ask people for help. And by doing that, by being vulnerable, I've been rewarded from just the healing that has come from that. And the people that have come forward and helped me has been amazing.
What did you learn from the people you spoke to? Obviously, a lot of senior members of the Cubs family who remembered him well. I'm sure you gathered some stories that just blew your mind.
Yes, great stories about his wit and his heart and his sense of humor, which really was striking and amazing, and his kindness. People would remember little kind things that he did for them, and how he helped the younger players and mentored them. So I really got to layer. I talk about layering flesh onto bone. I really got to get to know a man by the way he treated people, things that he said, things that he did, things that he ate, things that he liked to do that I didn't really know about from these other people and his interactions. And it brought him to me, a man that I could actually get to know and then miss. You know, now
yes.
I know what I've missed, and I've created this father that I can kind of hold in my heart and carry with me. And it's been just a beautiful and amazing story, a gift that I've given myself through the help of so many people.
Isn't it interesting how much information is really out there if you really take the journey?
It's true. There's so much information, so many people willing to help. And even when you feel like this is a lost cause, or this is so old, or these people are not going to remember me or remember my family member, just by putting yourself out there, you get so much in return. And I think the main thing that keeps coming back to me, the theme of all this, is that people remember the kindness that you show them. That's really all that endures. Once everything is gone, once the things are gone away and everything fades except for the kind memories, and that's your legacy. And it's just been a really beautiful way for me to honor my father and bring him to me, to my life.
That's kind of the Maya Angelou quote, right? About people may not remember what you said, but they do remember how they made you feel.
Exactly. And that has been, I have seen that. I have heard that. One man, Blake Cullen, who was the traveling secretary for the Chicago Cubs, I was told I needed to talk to him over and over again. And I finally found someone who could give me his number. And I found him and I got him on the phone. And he told me that as a young traveling secretary, he had all these books and he had this typewriter and he had all the stuff that he had to carry around. He didn't have an assistant back in the 60s. And so he was getting on the plane and my father came up behind him and just took his big typewriter thing from him and didn't say a word and just put it in his own overhead bin. My father did. And he carried that thing with him on every travel trip that Blake was with him. So Blake remembers my dad as being helpful just because he saw a person in need. He saw that Blake was in over his head. He was young. He wanted to make a good impression. And my dad on away games would, about the seventh inning, send the bat boy up to get that typewriter and bring it back down to my dad in the dugout so that he could carry it onto the airplane for Blake. And he just did that just the kindness. And Blake, all these years, 40 years later, remembers that.
Well, who wouldn't? Imagine a man of your father's stature on the team taking care of a young guy's equipment at that time. So this was the course over a couple of years you started collecting these stories. I'm assuming you've written them down and are starting some kind of collection with that.
Yes, I've written them down, and I'm in the process of writing a book about what I've learned about my dad and about my journey. It's kind of a book in two parts. I've got great collections of stories, mainly that just tell me little bits and pieces about his personality. And then something really miraculous started to happen once I began talking to these men from baseball of the golden age. They would ask me, well, who have you spoken to? Who have you talked to? And so then I would tell them who I had spoken with and tell them about that person. You know, they're living in Florida. And so I became kind of a conduit or a connection for these people that had lost touch with one another. So I felt like I was being used in a beautiful way as well to connect these men together again too. So it's just been very, really interesting. I've gotten a lot from it. Everybody has, just from me taking the chance to step out there and find something I want, it's come to me in waves, and it's been such a beautiful journey.
But the stories themselves really weren't enough. I mean, you had more that you were looking for. You wanted to hear the voice. 3 years later, the opportunity came along. We're going to talk about that when we return with Leanne Walker-Young from Charlotte, North Carolina, coming up next on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. And we are back. Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show, and ExtremeGenes.com. It is Fisher here talking with Leanne Walker-Young from Charlotte, North Carolina. She is the daughter of Verlin Rube Walker, the former coach of the Chicago Cubs, who passed away in 1971 when Leanne was only 3 years old. And just a few years ago, 2012, she decided it's time I got to know who my dad was. And she began a search, gathering stories, as we heard in the previous segment, but also looking to find the voice of her dad. And Leanne, was it frustrating to you, or were the stories fulfilling enough as you went along that you still enjoyed the journey?
I really did enjoy the journey. I try to talk about it as putting a canoe in the river and just letting the current take me. And I didn't really neurose about it. I didn't try to manipulate it. I allowed it to come to me. And that has taught me a lot in life, period. The lesson of just things move really much more smoothly when I get out of the way. All I did was just be willing, and the journey built on itself. One person would give me you need to call this person. Here's their phone number.
Right.
They knew your dad. And so I would do that, and I made the commitment early on, I will follow any lead. If someone emails me and tells me to do a library research, I go there. So I did all of that. I did the footwork, and it became really exhilarating, and it energized me once I got started. And it's very exciting. It really gets to the heart of the matter, you doing your personal journey and the mission of your soul and really finding out where you came from and the people that loved you and brought you into the world. It's so important and empowering in a lot of ways.
Yeah, well, I think so. And I think the fact is you get to know your father like you've never known him before, and suddenly he is a figure in your life, more than just a shadow.
Yes, and had many layers. I wanted to know all of him. I didn't want to know just what they wanted to tell me as someone who had died. And I wanted to know it all. I thought, if he had a temper, I want to know it. If he cursed somebody out, if he was mad, I wanted to know all of those things. So I brought all that to me. And the last piece of the puzzle was the voice.
Yes.
And I kept looking for that. I was very hopeful all along. I really thought I would eventually find something, but I had no idea I would find it in my own hometown. I really had no
idea. Isn't that something?
No idea.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit now. You started the search for the audio. Obviously, you were finding the stories as a result of that, but the ultimate goal was to hear his voice. And I would imagine still is that you'd like to find more of him speaking. And I can't imagine that you're not going to have that opportunity at some point with the effort you're putting out. But you got coverage on ESPN. And I'm just thinking, this can't be. How can a man as public as your father not have something out there for this woman to hear?
It's true. And I have a whole group of men, I think by nature, are hunter-gatherers.
Yes.
And so where I don't like to look on eBay, I have a whole gang, a gaggle, a team of men who follow my blog, and they search eBay, and they'll go to radio shows and all this stuff and collectors organizations, and they will look for me. I have eyes and ears out there, so that's miraculous and amazing. And the Keith Olbermann thing was just a watershed moment for me, because it did really put my story out there, and much more came to me as a result. And I do believe there's still something else out there, but the fact that it was a tape that my mother had put away and forgotten about in her own garage and was recorded in my own hometown, when my father asked Bobby Richardson, the Yankee second baseman, to come and speak at a church, my father's faith was important to him, and so was Bobby Richardson, still is, and he wanted him to come and, I guess, do a testimony of his faith at the church. So that was recorded because the Yankee was coming to town.
Sure.
And that was recorded, and my mom found it on cassette. The pastor, who is in his 80s now, gave it to my mother years and years ago, and we found it on cassette, and she had it put on DVD for me, or CD, so that it would be more preserved.
What a gift. And I've heard it on YouTube. You had it there. It's got a lot of noise in it and a lot of buzz, but your dad's voice cuts through well, even though it was kind of soft. So I've kind of enhanced it a little bit here so everybody can hear what you found. It's only about a minute long. Your dad introducing Bobby Richardson at a church in Lenoir, North Carolina, back in 1969.
We're very fortunate to have with us this morning Bobby Richardson, a great second baseman for the New York Yankees for many years. I told Bobby that this was great Yankee territory, so he can feel at home. And also, I'd like to introduce his daughter, Christy, sitting down here. And Christy, would you stand up, please? Bobby was a great baseball player. Man, this is Yankee territory. I guess I could be here all day trying to tell all the great days he had on the baseball field. And most of you Yankee fans would already know about it. So I'll not try to attempt to tell all the accomplishments that he did on the field, but Bobby has also had many great days off the field. Bobby was a great leader on and off the field. He was very active in youth groups, various religious groups, and in my lifetime, I guess Bobby is the most respected player in baseball.
Wow. What does that make you feel like when you hear that?
Really, the first couple of times I heard it, I was completely blown away. I still get a little teary-eyed when I hear it because I still want more. I want to hear him talk to me. That's kind of where it goes. That's where I go in my mind. I'm so grateful that I have that sound of his mountain accent, and he was made fun of so much for that accent and being such a southern boy and simple man. It just really takes me right to, you know, the heart of what I really want, which is him.
I'll bet. And you've probably played it a million times since you found
it. Yes, I have.
And I'm sure to some extent it does speak to you.
It does. I really just am mesmerized by it, actually. It sounds, I always thought his voice would be more grovelly and low, I guess because he was an athlete.
Sure.
But the more I listen to it, it's gentle and sweet, and it matches who I've been told who he was. And I'm glad I didn't find the voice first off, because I wouldn't have gone on that beautiful, beautiful journey to search it. And the journey really was the treasure. It was what I needed to do to heal my soul.
And then from this, you went on to Chicago and actually visited the hospital wing that is named after your dad. Now, what was his illness?
He died of leukemia. And after, upon his death, the Cubs donated money to Northwestern Hospital. And they started a wing in the hospital called the Verlin Rube Walker Leukemia Center. And it's now called the Blood Center, the Rube Walker Blood Center, because they do more than just leukemia. They really focus on these blood diseases where they have these beautiful, incredible machines that can circulate the good, healthy platelets and all that stuff and separate it all out. And you can use your own stem cells to heal your body. It's amazing.
Isn't that
great? Amazing work.
And
yeah.
To think that 40-some-odd years after his passing, your dad's name is on that wing and is being remembered as people go through that life-saving treatment.
Yes. That simple boy who left high school, didn't graduate high school just because he wanted to go play Major League Baseball, has this legacy of this medical facility named after him, and he would probably laugh about that. And he would be so blissed out that people get healing under his name. It's something that maybe his death went to a good cause. He would love that.
Well, it's been an amazing journey for you, Leanne, and I so appreciate your taking the time to come on the show and talk to us about it. And to see that you've had such great success and fulfillment in what you've been doing.
Yes, I'm honored you asked me, and this is my favorite subject to talk about. I love it. I encourage anyone to take this journey of their own. It's a beautiful way to honor your loved ones that have passed and heal yourself.
That's a great way to put it. Perfect. Leanne Walker-Young from Charlotte, North Carolina, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
And coming up next, Tom Perry, our preservation authority, talking about taking your faded and cracked and chipped old photographs, restoring them, and making new albums with them to share forever. On Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. It is preservation time at Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. Fisher here, the Radio Root Sleuth with Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com. He is our preservation authority. Hi, Tom. Good to see you.
Hello. It's super awesome to be here.
And we've been getting a lot of questions about organizing photographs lately, and it's interesting because this is kind of like a moving target right now, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Absolutely. In fact, I just returned from a genealogy convention the other day. And that's what was on everybody's mind. Most of the classes that were tailored towards that, they were just packed, standing room only.
And everybody's ready to try to figure out, okay, how do we save these pictures? I think the thing I think about most are some of my mom's old photo albums from the 70s. The sticky ones.
Oh, the wax ones.
Yeah. And then you had the photographs in them that were horrible in themselves because they had that texture, that rough.
Yeah, I think they called it satin finish.
Something like that. I had a picture of me with Mickey Mantle that was in that finish, and it was so awful to try to digitize that and blow that up because all the little bumps made it look kind of weird. And nonetheless, the fact is you had bad pictures, you had bad albums to stick them in, and now those pictures are fading and they have the bad surface. So where do you start trying to restore these things and make a nice album?
You know, that's a really good question. You brought up a lot of points we can talk about, and I've had people have the same problem. They scan those old photos we call the satin finish. And the light would reflect off all the little divots, and you'd see it look like snow. You'd think it's a bad scan, and you'd scan it again. So what's wrong with my scanner?
Right.
Nothing wrong with your scanner. It's stupid satin photo just so it won't hold fingerprints is why they made it. So a lot of times what you can do, you can turn down, I hate to say this, but turn down the DPI on your scanner. Because what happens, like on our scanner, we have such a high DPI on it, it gets every little crack and crevice. If there's a little teeny piece of dandruff on it, it's going to look like it was there.
And so what DPI would you set it to, do you think? I normally do about 1,200 for pictures.
Oh, exactly. And that's what you want to do. And of the little teeny ones, sometimes you're doing 3,600.
Right.
But of the ones that I think they used to be about 4x4, which were the satin finish ones. And what you have to do is just experiment, because different scanners scan different ways. The LED ones scan different than the ones that have the little cathode-type tube in them that reflects off the picture. So try different things. Keep your scanning as high as you can. Another thing you can do also is scan them at the high DPI, then go into Photoshop. And sometimes with some softening filters, you can kind of make it go away. Or sometimes you can go in and say, bring down the luminosity. And the pictures still look okay, but it kind of zeroes out all the whites.
Oh, that's good.
And that can help it quite a bit too. But the best thing to do is always scan it at full DPI and make sure you keep a copy of that, even though it looks really crappy to you. And then go down and find one that looks good that you can begin to immediately share. Because one day you're going to want to go back and work on those and make those better. And whether it's tomorrow or 5 years or 10 years from now, at least you've got it at the high DPI before it starts to fade, and then you're going to have to do more work in Photoshop.
And that's the important part, is making sure the pictures look good before you go about trying to save these or put them in albums or preserve them, right?
Exactly. And Kodak Scanner, the one that's the auto feed, they probably do the best job of anyone's that I've seen of the satin finish type photos. Because same thing with our flatbed, we have problems. And a lot of times our Kodak multi-feed, which we use, takes away a lot of those problems. It's just the light that it's using is different. And so the way it's reflecting is different, but the pictures look dynamite. So that's an option. And we've talked about you can rent them out of a place called Easy Photo Scan in Florida.
Right.
They can send it to you for your family reunion. And the auto feed one is awesome. It's the best one I've seen to work with a satin finish photos.
So that's step one, making sure that all the pictures look great before you start to create a digital photo album.
Exactly. And one thing, too, that I want to mention right now, so I don't forget it, and I mention it in almost every show, and it scared me to death. We had somebody come into the genealogy convention or the family history convention. Hey, I just scanned 1,300 photos, and I have them all right here on my flash drive.
Oh.
And I go, where else are they? Nowhere. And I went white. Oh. She thought I was going to pass out.
And you practically collapsed.
Oh, I did. I mean, I went white. She looked at me, and I think she's ready to dial 911. I know we have new listeners every week as we pick up new stations across the country, and they haven't had the time to go back and download the app so they can listen to the old shows. And I say so many times, do not do that. You know, a lot of people make mistakes. It's just they didn't know any better. So people don't know the difference between a solid-state hard drive, a normal hard drive, USB. USB is the reason that they're so inexpensive, the USB thumb drives, is because they use the cheapest stuff they can get. Chips, everything in them are just really, really inexpensive. They were never made to be an end storage device. They're a transfer device. If you're at a family reunion, they're a great thing to put all your stuff on. It's quick and easy, fast and burning a disk. But as soon as you get home, put those on your hard drive, put them on the cloud, burn a disk, distribute the disks across the country so you're covered. How many times have you lost your keys?
Yeah.
How many
right.
times have you misplaced your keys? I've heard stories about people had a thumb drive in their pocket and that they were at somebody's house, had this big, huge entertainment center. They were leaning up against one of the big speakers, these like 6-foot theater speakers. Erased their drive.
Wow.
The giant magnet in it.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. I mean, you could take your keys, and if you set them on a big magnet, not thinking, there's a possibility, depending on the architecture of the USB drive, you could lose everything.
That's right.
Don't store stuff on those. They're great things. I have one in my pocket. I use it all the time, but I always store it on other places.
All right. Now, we've got these pictures straightened out, as we talked about in the last segment. We have them properly preserved on a couple of clouds and disks, and they're distributed all over the country on your hard drive. Now we're talking about creating new albums with the preserved pictures. How do we do this?
My favorite software out there is from Heritage Collector. So go to heritagecollectors.com. Marlo, who we have had as a guest, this guy is a genius.
Yes,
it's just
he is.
Amazing.
We call him Madman Marlo because
exactly.
he's always inventing new stuff, and it's incredible stuff.
He has things right now where you can print calendars right from his software. If you have old people that are in your ancestry on their birth date, you can have this little QR code on their birth date. The kids think it's so much fun. They shoot the QR code. It can be a slideshow of great-great-grandfather being an outlaw in jail or chasing trains or gardening or fishing, all these different things. And it is so neat for the kids. They understand their ancestors. Plus, grandma and grandpa can have a deal on their birthday that when they scan it, they're singing you happy birthday.
Exactly. There's so much stuff that you can do with QR codes and this new technology. And he does have outstanding software. What else can people do? Obviously, Shutterfly is a great place to go.
Shutterfly is a good place. Heritage Makers is a great place. Now, one thing you want to be very, very careful with, and I tell all my customers this, no matter who you use, make sure you read the fine print. Half the time when I sign up for software, oh, yeah, agree. I never read it. Make sure you read all the information, because there are people out there that it says right in their fine print, they don't have exclusivity to your photos. However, they do have a right to sell your photos to clip art places. And it's happened. We had the story about somebody walked into an IKEA, saw their neighbors, thought, oh, I didn't know my neighbors did modeling, called them, found out that there were some pictures they uploaded to one of these sites, and they sold it to a clip art company.
Oh, man. Unbelievable. All right. Good advice. Thanks so much, Tom. We'll see you again next week. And if you have a question for Tom Perry about preservation, send your email to asktom@tmcplace.com. That wraps it up for this week. And thanks once again to Leanne Walker-Young from Charlotte, North Carolina, for coming on and sharing her amazing journey in search of knowledge of her father and ultimately resulting in finding a voice recording. Unbelievable stuff. If you missed the segments, listen to the podcast. They'll be out this week on iTunes and ExtremeGenes.com and iHeartRadio. Talk to you next week. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family. This has been Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Share your family's story by going to FamilySearch.org.